Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I'm your host. My name is Chris Lockhart, and I am joined by two of my co-hosts in crime. First up, we got Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Well, good, and hello, everyone.
And last but not least, we have Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kev?
Hello, guys. It's been a little while. Question for both of you. Quick question here.
Yep.
Not to throw everything off the rails already. No.
Go right ahead.
Do you hate it as you get older when you find yourself saying things that one of your parents said to you when you were younger?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Last couple weeks, I keep hearing my dad come out of my mouth. I was like, oh, God, jeez, again.
Well, that's the funny thing with growing older is... you know, you understand where your parents are coming from now. You know, like,
yeah.
You know, you're like, I'll never be like that. But then you kind of become like that. You know, because I
fought it every step of the way too, and still it happened.
Yeah, that's funny.
I don't have kids, so I can't completely relate. But I definitely, you know, have found as I've gotten older that, you know, things I didn't think I would like and things I didn't think were interesting are, you know, actually kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I remember as a kid, you know, I used to hate when my parents would put on the news, and now I watch the news like all the time. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, at least, you know, like in the evening, I try and catch at least the evening news for sure. But, yeah, it's funny how things, they change, but then they stay the same in a way, I guess.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah.
There's an episode of Adventure Time where Marceline, the Vampire Queen, because she's lived for so long,
yep,
says that there's a pattern to life, but no one lives long enough to see the pattern.
Yeah.
No, it hurt a little.
Yep, absolutely.
That show is always funny because it's like a kid's show and then it's totally not a kid's show.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, my kid loves it on a certain level and then I love it on a completely different level.
Yeah, that's a better way of putting it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it's one of my favorites. I still haven't completely finished the last season, though, because I just can't bring myself to do that. You know.
Yeah. You don't want to actually admit that it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. It's a great show.
Yeah.
So Ragnar, how's the shows been now that you've been able to attend some shows?
Well, I've done 4 shows since everything has started opening up in the prairies. 3 of them were still what I would call small shows, although uh-huh. they were all wonderful to be at. And then one of them was a big show in the before times, and it was a big show this year. And yes, I still have some concerns about COVID, and it's, you know, there's a lot of the cases are rising. There's a lot of concern about the Delta variant. It's hard to tell who's vaccinated and not, so on and so forth. But if we put that aside for a minute, man, did it feel good to be back at shows.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know,
it's something that I like doing and something that I'm good at doing, and you don't quite realize how much you like your job and how important it is to you until you don't really get to do it for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, it felt great. And I have, I think, two more small shows, and then it's, you know, assuming there's no shutdowns and so on, and then it's all big shows for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So I'm getting pretty excited, but I'm also trying to caution myself. You know, don't get too excited. These mm-hmm. things could still get totally derailed. And we're going to hope that they don't, but it could still happen.
Yeah. I know, like, for myself, I'm looking forward to the Edmonton Expo. Like, I've got that weekend booked off already. You know, fingers crossed it still happens. And then
They've just announced some more guests today. Like, they've been announcing people like crazy.
Oh, I got to check it out. I didn't see anything for today. I know Shatner's going to be there. That's the guy that I want to meet. And Lou Ferrigno. You know, those are two guys I really want to meet. I've already met Shatner, but last time I met him was 10 years ago. And the reason I met him 10 years ago is because I was like, well, the guy's in his 80s, right?
Yeah, I know.
You know, I better do this.
This really might be my last chance.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Because I don't want to make that mistake of, well, I'll catch him next time, because I did that with Carrie Fisher. Yeah. I did that with Adam West. And I just don't want to miss out again, you know. Although I did physically see Carrie Fisher from a distance, and I did see Adam West walking through the crowds at the Calgary Expo that year he was there. But I had a choice between Stan Lee and Adam West. And, I mean, at the time, you know, Stan was older than Adam. So I was like, well, I better go see Stan. You know, using the age logic, I was like, I better go see Stan first. But then Stan outlived him, and he actually came back to Calgary again. So I could have went and seen him. Right. But, how do you know, right? Like, that's like Carrie Fisher, like... You know, I figured, oh, I'll catch you the next time, because, you know, like, the lineup was too long. Yeah.
We all thought that with her.
Yeah. You know, especially, someone so vibrant, like, it's, you know, anyway. Yeah, it's great that shows are back and we're getting out there. Like, this weekend, I'm actually going to a concert in Edmonton. I think it's called Concert in the Park or something. I don't know.
I heard about that. There's a bunch of good names at that.
Yeah, like the big ones this weekend is Tom Cochran and Glass Tiger.
Cool.
Yeah.
Get your groove on, man.
Yeah. Well, next weekend it was Blue Rodeo, and that's the one I wanted to go see, but it was sold out.
Yeah.
So, I'm going with my mom, my sister, and my brother-in-law, so we have a table booked, so which is nice, so, you know, we don't have to, like, stand around, we get a table, and apparently, you know, you don't even have to go to the bar, you know, like, there's a thing you scan on your phone, and you can order your food and your drinks, and they bring them to you.
Oh.
And I'm assuming you pay with e-transfer or... PayPal, something like that. I'm not sure. Or maybe you pay when they bring it to you. I don't know. But
yeah, okay.
You know, I'm not a big concert goer just because I don't like the crowds. Whereas like in my opinion, like when you go to a comic expo, it's a little bit different because you can move around. And you know, if it's getting too much, like if there's too many people, you can like, you know, go outside or whatever, you can move around. Whereas when you go to a concert, you're supposed to stay, like you're not supposed to come and go. And it's been a few years since I've actually went to like a real big concert. So we'll see how this goes. I'm sure it'll be great.
I think it's very exciting to finally be able to do things again. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, yeah. In the before times, you know, there could be so many concerts in a year that sometimes you didn't even bother going because you were just like, eh, you know, yep. whatever. I'll catch it next time. Or, you know, I went to 10 shows this year. I'm good. And then when you get that, you know, almost 2 years of basically nothing.
Yeah.
Man, like even something that you're not even that into is suddenly super exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and yeah, like for myself, like, you know, Glass Tiger and Tom Cochran, would I, like, yeah, 2 years ago, would I went to their concert? Probably not. But yeah, it's been so long, we're like, yeah, we gotta go. You know, we gotta do something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, yeah, I'm sure it'll be great. All right, well, for this episode, it's called The Best of Bad. We've done one of these before where we talked about bad guys in particular, or bad women, depending on, you know, the person's choice. So it's a top five format. But for this edition of Best of Bad, we're going with groups / organizations. So, you know, these are the you know, the big bad guys, you know, like the as a group or organization. All right, so Kevin, number five on your list of best of bad group organization.
Oh, we're starting with me. I feel so honored. I have a weird one, and it's a good one for number five, because really I'm just kind of sneaking it in for, it's something that I don't know a whole lot about, kind of on purpose, because I never wanted to ruin the mystique.
Mm-hmm.
But it was when the toys came out in the 80s, I thought, well, what is this? And then unfortunately, the way that the cartoon was at the time, I never really got to see what it would be.
Mm-hmm.
But the other problem is I was not buying the comic as often as I should have, because my understanding is that it was gone into more detail in the comics. But that is a long way of saying the Iron Grenaders from the later runs of G.I. Joe, when Destro did his gold mask and his military suit and went full-blown as another bad guy, no longer connected with Cobra.
Yep.
And then he had his own troops, like the Vipers, like the Cobra Troopers, you know, whatever you want to call it. He had his own ones. And they were called the Iron Grenaders, and they just looked amazing. It was such a cool look. We have this whole other faction here. It really was looking like European, not even European, but like previous Iron Curtain, but some sort of like royalty or regalness and history to the entire look. But I just always thought it was so cool. Good, real good troop builder toy. Just get a bunch of them and line them all up. And it was one that I never, like, I have this whole mystique in my head about it, and I had a feeling there was one that, like, I wouldn't cross over with either of you about it. But that just was such a cool thing growing up, and I really at some point need to just buy the graphic novels or see if it's all in Comixology or whatever, and go through all the Larry Hama G.I. Joe run, because he did some amazing stuff in there that the cartoon certainly never touched on, and really expanded a lot of the toys. Like, because it's continuing now in IDW as part of the same run, like the numbering continued.
Yep.
And he's messing with people that, you know, were out in the 80s. That, you know, nothing else touched back then. Because you had the second run of the cartoon from Dick, whatever the hell they call it. And it was a joke, really. And I've watched some of it, and it focuses on, like, one or two characters. But there's so many new ones that didn't really get anything. So I don't know. I was just I was looking at the list, and I was thinking of things, and I was like, you know, for a fifth pick, I want to throw something odd out there, something that I was pretty sure you guys wouldn't.
Nice. That's a great not choice.
On my list.
And I love like the gold looking Destro. Like That issue, I can't remember what issue of G.I. Joe it was in, where it's him on the cover and he's being hunted by Cobra. That's actually my screenshot for my tablet. When I go to my homepage, because I just love that cover. It looked so amazing. And I think the Baroness was with him, right? At some point, she defected from Cobra, and because her and Destro had a thing going.
I believe so.
Yeah, but yeah, like those Larry Hama books. I mean, yeah, like they're still going on. That's on my to do list, like my comic book to do list, to go back and read a lot of, because I didn't really read them a lot. Like I'd catch a few arcs here and there, in the 80s, 90s. but I would love to go back and reread those, and Comixology, I think they're all on Comixology, and every once in a while they'll have like a G.I. Joe sale, so I'll buy a couple here and there, but I just haven't got around to reading them. Cause yeah, Larry Hama's amazing. Like he's basically it's his notes. Like from what I understand, like you remember on the toys, like they would have like the little card, built into the package, describing the character and their abilities and their specialties and all that. Apparently that was Larry Hama that did that. And then it was him that plotted the comic, and basically, it was his notes that the animators used for the original show. So I mean, yeah, we really have Larry Hama to thank for what we have in terms of G.I. Joe. That being said, a couple things. I had the fortune of actually sharing an elevator with Larry Hama back in 2011. He was at the Calgary Expo. Cool. And I didn't realize it was him until, because we were in we were in the elevator with him and another couple. It was me and my wife. And this guy with the other couple was talking to him and blah, blah, blah. And then, we got to the main floor and they all exited. And I heard like the guy tell his lady, "That's Larry Hama." And then as soon as he said that, I was like, "Oh my God, that's Larry Hama." And and then I had to tell my wife, "That was Larry Hama." And she's like, "Oh, cool. Who's Larry Hama?" And then I had to explain to her who Larry Hama was. So yeah, it was pretty cool. I didn't actually get to see him on the convention floor or anything that year, but because that was another busy year of photo ops and everything. That was the year I met Shatner. Was at that.
Oh, nice.
At that Calgary Con. And then another thing, I was going to go to my local theater on Tuesday because it was the only night I had available this week to go see Snake Eyes, the movie. I haven't heard a lot about it. I'm assuming it tanked because I haven't heard a lot about it. But I thought, what the hell? I'll go see Snake Eyes, even though I'm not a big fan of the G.I. Joe films. But I later found out my theater isn't actually open on Tuesdays, so I couldn't go see it. And now tomorrow, I can't remember if it's Black Widow or Suicide Squad they're showing. But anyway, I missed it. But I might catch it when it shows up on Amazon Prime or whatever. But excellent choice. Kevin, that was really cool. And Ragnar, number 5 on your list, sir.
Well, I got to throw this back to when I was just a little kid, and it's got to be the Foot Clan from Ninja Turtles.
Oh, nice.
Because, when I was a kid, Ninja Turtles, I liked Transformers, and I liked G.I. Joe, and I liked He-Man, and I liked Spider-Man and Inspector Gadget, but one thing reigned supreme in my childhood, and that was Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
And I still love it to this day. I don't follow turtle stuff as much. I'm now more into Star Wars and Star Trek and so on. But when I was a kid, man, Ninja Turtles just reigned supreme. And of course, Shredder and, Krang and the Foot Clan and many other villains. So, yeah, we got to throw it out to them because They were the original archetype villains for me, anyways.
Excellent. I know in the most recent series that they're doing with Ninja Turtles, there was actually a twist with the Foot Clan, in that Splinter fought Shredder and actually beat him, and seemingly killed him, but I think he's since come back. I'm not up to date. But because he beat him, Splinter became the head of the Foot Clan. And so he was trying to turn them from being, you know, clan of bad assholes to a clan of you know, doing good. Created a divide between him and his sons, because the Ninja Turtles, you know, they didn't support Splinter in this. So they went their own way, and then Splinter became head of the Foot Clan. But like I said, I'm not up to date. I know Shredder has since come back, I believe, so. And there was, you know, those within the Foot Clan that didn't like Splinter's leadership, so. I just thought it was a neat twist that, you know, the Foot Clan doesn't necessarily have to be bad. It's just, if their leader's bad, they're bad. But they could also be good.
They're just the soldiers, right? Yeah. They're just doing what they're told to do, and, you know. And although, you know, I did love I think it was 1990, the live action film came out.
Yep.
You know, and I did like how they kind of showed how, you know, who joined the Foot Clan was, you know, kids that were kind of lost and disillusioned, and you know, they did as much as you can in a short movie that's aimed at children. They did kind of explore a little bit more, and the Foot Clan were fleshed out a bit more, and they weren't just generic villains that can get beat up and we never see them. There was a little bit more to them.
Yeah. Or just robots, because, you know.
Or robots. Yeah. Or whatever, you know.
You can't, you know, because in the cartoon you can't show Leonardo slashing people with a sword, so they had to make them robots, right?
Yeah, because then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think nowadays, and not in the Turtles franchise I'm talking, but just in general, the new version of that is zombies.
Yeah.
You know, you watch a show like The Walking Dead, and it's like, everybody's okay to kill zombies. There's no moral quandary. There's no issues. You just kill them, and that's it. And I think that's sort of the new version of that.
Unless it's somebody you love. Like when Daryl had to kill his brother there.
Yeah, unless it's somebody who's known previously. But they don't do a whole lot of... They did do some of that in that show, but not a whole lot of it.
Yeah. Excellent.
Most of the zombies we encountered in The Walking Dead were randos.
Yeah. All right, so number five on my list, and this, I had to pick which one to go with, because there was three in contention for this spot. So I went with Skeletor's Evil Warriors, air quotes, Evil Warriors.
That was on my list, too.
Yeah, like, and so the other two that I mentioned, it's the Horde and the Snake Men, you know, like these three were like the big evil groups in the He-Man universe. But I went with Skeletor's Evil Warriors because I love Skeletor, you know, I love, and especially in the 2002 He-Man series, like they really fleshed out, you know, their relationship. Like in the original cartoon, usually you'd see Skeletor, then it'd be like one or two of them, and that would be it, because, you know, like that's all they could do with animation, right? Whereas in the 2002 series, I mean, they were actually a group, you know, and they you know, worked together, and, you know, Triclops was the brilliant engineer guy. Evil-Lyn was, you know, the backstabbing sorceress. And then they had Whiplash and Trapjaw. And they had Clawful. Eventually they ended up with Too Bad and Stinkor. Merman, of course. You know, and I just love, you know, when they would interact, and Skeletor would get annoyed with them and beat them up or whatever. But I also, like I said, honorable mentions, the Horde and the Snake Man. I love these groupings of villains. And and how diverse they were. You know, like I think, you know, whoever designed these characters and the and their backstories really did a, an awesome job differentiating them. So yeah, number five, Skeletor's Evil Warriors. All right, Kevin, number four on your list, sir.
All right, I got another comic pick, but more obvious comic pick, I think. I love AIM, Advanced Idea Mechanics in Marvel.
Nice.
The beekeeper outfits there, you can just throw them in for anything at any time, and no one cares. It just works. Because, like, I've read, I think the first time I discovered AIM was when I first started reading comics, I got grabbed a Solo Avengers. And Dr. Pym had a story, and then I found a West Coast Avengers, because he was in that. And they were going after, Pym had an ex-wife, like, before Janet Van Dyne, and somehow AIM got a hold of her and turned her into a female MODOK. And I've never seen this again. Doesn't matter. It's AIM. You know, like, I will read random Marvel comic and it'll be, oh, who's behind this? And then you just throw AIM in there. You're like, oh, it's AIM. And there's a head scientist. And that's all you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need anything more. You can put people in there, of course. Like, oh, you're working for AIM now. Or, oh, I thought we'd feed you a while ago. Like, you could put an actual named villain in there anytime. You could also be like, here's random AIM scientists, and this is just what they're doing. It could be in space. It could be in the middle of the ocean. It could be under the ocean. It could be underground. It could be in the middle of Manhattan. Like, it doesn't matter. It's such an easy story, really. Just, here's a bad guy. It's AIM. Let's have fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's, like, one of the best things in comics. I mean, I love, you know, getting an epic story, and it's six issues or eight or 12 or whatever. Like, I love a build for stuff, too. But sometimes you just love a stupid, it doesn't have to mean anything story to just enjoy comics. And yep. Then just someone beating up a bunch of, you know, random AIM henchmen. So much fun. They did a toy of it a while ago. And I remember they put it up because it was, you can buy one or you can buy the groups of them. And there are people, they're just like, oh, I'm totally buying the groups. Like, they knew what they were doing and made a fortune probably off of those. And I think I would like AIM better. Like, Hydra, very similar idea, but Hydra's also more complicated mm-hmm. with all of the stuff they've done. Whereas AIM is just evil scientists and that's it. Like, that's all you need to know. Hydra, you got to sit down and actually have an explanation, and there's recognizable leaders over the years. And, you know, you get into the MCU where it's more of a, like, secret organization infiltrating everything. AIM just bad guy scientists. Done.
Yeah.
Let's go running. So I think that's why I enjoy them so much.
Excellent. Have you seen the MODOK series lately, at all?
No. No, but I am checking off more shows lately. So I'm going to add that to the list, too. I'm actually, when we're done recording, I've been debating, I want to watch a movie, but I know staying up late is not going to be a good idea.
Yep.
So then I've been thinking, maybe I should just do a half hour thing afterwards instead.
Well, AIM figures prominently, obviously, in the MODOK series, and I love it when they show up in the show, because, you know, like, they just play them off as kind of like goofballs that don't really know, like they're not good enough to work for S.H.I.E.L.D., so they just get a job with AIM. and then there's, like, you know, Steve and then whatever, like, a couple random names, and they're just in their beekeeper outfits just talking like, you know, like two normal guys would talk. You know, the one guy gets his arm blown off by MODOK, and he just kind of shrugs it off like, you know, it's part of the job, you know. It's really funny. I love when they have AIM on there. Definitely worth checking out for sure. Ragnar, number four on your list, sir.
Okay, number four on my list. This is going into
you know, the Star Trek universe, which is, of course, very familiar to myself if you've listened to any of our other podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go with the Borg. The Borg were my favorite of the Star Trek villains. I mean, the Romulans are great, too. Don't get me wrong. They're a great villain. But when I was a kid, and even as an adult, the Borg freaked me out way more because there's something about the Borg that doesn't actually feel like it's all that far off. Like, some days, mm-hmm. the way technology's headed and the way you can walk down a street and see everybody on their phone and no one's paying attention to anything else, you start to think, you know, maybe this concept of the Borg isn't that far off. Maybe that is something we're going to see one day. And of course, you know, the melding of technology with organic matter. Lots of other sci-fi fandoms after Star Trek have done that, probably some before. But the Borg, for me, were the ultimate in that, you know, in that vein.
I got to ask you, Ragnar, which version of the Borg do you prefer? Do you prefer the original TNG Best of Both Worlds, where they're, you know, like they had the white skin, you know, they were just like emotionless? Or do you like the First Contact version, where they seem like they were angry zombies with?
I think that I like the first ones more, the TNG style ones, where they were kind of more like insects and
yeah.
drone workers.
Yep.
And they're all very pale skinned, no matter what race they are. I think I like that better. But I didn't hate what they did in First Contact. I don't think they quite, like, for me, they didn't quite hit the nail square on the head, but I didn't hate it. It was an interesting take. It was an interesting place to take it. Didn't hate it. Didn't necessarily love it, but didn't hate it. One of my favorite Borg things, though, was in Enterprise, which I don't think we've got to that season yet in our other podcast, but there's an episode where they discover some Borg who I believe survived the First Contact
yep.
storyline in the Arctic, and they dig them up, and then they, of course, come back to life and start killing everybody, and that's one of my favorite Enterprise. I think it was a two-parter, wasn't it? Was it a one-off? Anyways, that's one of my favorite Enterprise ones.
Yeah, I think it was just a one-off, but yeah, it definitely... And then they imply that because they sent a signal towards the Delta Quadrant, that it was this
yeah.
that brought them to the Alpha Quadrant in the first place.
Yeah, which was cool.
Yeah, like I thought that was cool. Yeah, like I didn't hate the First Contact ones. I just didn't like how, like, they played it. Like, they looked like they were angry. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, in the original TNGs, they seemed more like emotionless, like they, you know, like they just...
Yeah, well, they were absolutely, they were completely emotionless.
And to me, that yeah. I found that more scarier, you know, because these yep. things just walk up to you and assimilate you. However, I did like in First Contact that they kind of explained, like, they basically inject you, and then you start forming your own cybernetic components organically. Like, they, like, it turns
yeah.
your own organic matter into these cybernetic components, as well as yeah. as what they put on you too.
Yeah,
I thought that was kind of neat. However, I did, and in the future we are going to be on Trek 171. We are going to be doing a Voyager overview, and that's one okay. of my and that's one of my complaints oh, yeah. about yeah. Voyager was they really,
they really made the Borg sexy.
No, the opposite. The Borg, I think, is better used when it's not, when they're not used. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Like, they just overdid it. And that's one of the fundamental problems with Voyager, is they borrowed too much from the Next Generation. Like, they didn't really have anything of their own. And then when they tried it, they never stuck it out. But anyway, that's a whole other episode.
Yeah, we could talk about that all night.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Number four on my list, this is from Babylon 5. It's the Shadows. They're an ancient race of combination of human and spider, you know, like they have spider qualities, but they also have humanoid qualities. They can cloak themselves, so they could be walking around and you wouldn't even know they're there. And their ships are the same, like they're organic ships. So their ships could be nearby and you don't know they're there until they reveal themselves. And, you know, just their ideology, you know, that the only way to move forward is, the only way that any race can move forward is through conflict. That, you know, just kind of, you know, like they use the analogy of kicking over an ant pile, and then the ants rebuild their pile and they make it stronger and better. So that's basically what the shadows do, is they go out and kick over a bunch of ant piles. Like, you know, they'll go out and start wars and do that in the hopes that the race that they're, you know, at war with, either if they don't die, they'll become stronger. So it's an interesting ideology, and they have followers, like the Drok, for example, is one of the races that, you know, basically view them as gods. And when the shadows leave, spoilers, when they leave the galaxy and leave the Drok behind, the Drok are pissed, and they strike out as a result of this. So yeah, the shadows, I just think were such a cool concept. I always used to say I would love to have seen them on Star Trek. You know, like they would have been an amazing villain race for Star Trek. I mean, they were amazing villain race for Babylon 5, but. Mm-hmm. I would love to have seen, you know, them fighting against Starfleet. Like, I think that would have been so awesome. All right. Kevin, number three on your list, sir.
Okay. So, I'm kind of saying two because really it's the same idea. You can call it the Bank of Evil from the Despicable Me movie. Or I would like to call it the Guild of Calamitous Intent from Venture Brothers. Nice. But the idea of a supervillain trade union that just oversees everything, establishes rules of conduct, hires your henchmen for them, finds your arch nemesis, loans you money for your crazy plan. Like, this is something that would have to exist. Mm-hmm. In a superhero world, they absolutely would have to. Yeah. Like, I think one of the fun things for Falcon Winter Soldier was Falcon trying to get a bank loan.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, I mean, he has no income as a superhero, really. And that's a thing that, like, every so often Marvel, you know, as the world outside your window and more reality-based, will touch on, of course, Peter Parker being, you know, the main one of having money problems and also being a hero. But the supervillain's more outlandish plans would require more money. Mm-hmm. Like, Peter Parker's just trying to make rent or, you know, pay bills or whatever as normal day-to-day stuff. He's not creating, like, a base on the moon and all these henchmen that we need to get paid and everything like a supervillain actually would. So seeing these ideas in the movies, I'm like, you would need one. Like, mm-hmm. This is brilliant. This would absolutely have to happen. And I could totally see, like, okay, if you pull off this heist, we get this amount of money for it. And here's the things that we do. And here's why, you know, villains are always bailed out of jail. And here's why henchmen always come around, because it's a job. It's still a job. It's not a bad job. But, you know, you might get beat up, but mm-hmm. We'll take care of you. Like, I just love the concept. And I understand, like, there's not much you could do with it on its own. It has to be an extension of a superhero thing. It's not going to create, like, toys or anything, too. But when we're already playing around in those worlds, I love that concept so much. Like, I've always, every so often there'll be, like, a G.I. Joe comic or something. They'll be like, oh, geez, have you seen Cobra's dental plan? You know, just... like, stupid stuff like that to kind of explain how they constantly get people to sign up for it. So just, I love that idea. I'm sure that, you know, when someone finally did it, it was probably an idea Stan Lee's like, why didn't I think of that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Speaking of, side note, because we talked about conventions earlier, and I meant to bring it up when I just said Stan Lee, I realized, have you heard about the Stan Lee impersonator that's going to be at conventions this year?
No.
Okay, so this guy, at some point within the last year, realizes he looks a lot like Stan Lee, or he purposely, like, made changes to look a lot like Stan Lee.
Yeah. Okay.
So he's marketing himself out to conventions as Dan Lee, and charging for photos with him.
Oh, I love it. That's so hokey.
Oh, it's incredibly hokey. It's so bad.
Oh.
Well, I guess if you can pull it off, you know, like...
What was the name Kirby called him when he went to D.C.? And he was mocking Stan, like the Flim Flam Man or something.
Oh, what the hell? I know what you're talking about.
This is not going to be an easy search.
Shit, I totally forget now. Yeah, because they've done that a few times in comic books. There is a guy, they actually brought him to Volcon the last year they had Volcon.
Yeah, Spock Vegas.
Yeah, the guy that looks like he looks like Leonard Nimoy. He's from Germany. And that's his shtick. Like, he goes to conventions, he dresses up as Spock, he, you know, puts on the ears and he dresses up as Spock from different eras, like the original series uniform, the movies. And yeah, that's his thing. Like, he just looks a lot like Leonard Nimoy. So he goes to these conventions and gets paid to take pictures and stuff. So I guess if you got him, you know.
Funky Flashman.
Funky Flashman, yes. He was just in... was it the Mr. Miracle series that Tom King did? I think he was.
Really?
Yeah, Tom King had him in the Mr. Miracle.
Same article I brought up to find the name, yeah.
Yeah.
As a babysitter. Oh, my God, now I got to find that.
Yeah. No, that's a great series. Great series. Which is funny because that's a Kirby creation, and I know that's not a coincidence that Tom King did that. But getting back to the Bank of Evil concept, it's something you don't think of, but it makes total sense. Like, this isn't necessarily an evil bank, but in Game of Thrones, the Bank of Braavos, you know, like, it makes sense that...
Oh, true.
You know, there would be an organization out there that people would go to because, you know, like Cersei Lannister says, you know, gold wins wars, you know, and that's what the Bank of Braavos does, is they lend money out to people and they expect to be paid back. And if they don't get their money, they'll hire a sellsword company to come collect, you know? So, you know, the idea that, there's all this financing out there, like, it totally makes sense. And also, you know, what you're saying, Kevin, about like Cobra, you know, the dental plan and stuff. There was a comic book that came out a few years ago. It's Hank something, Agent of Hydra. I can't remember his last name. I can't remember. But basically, it was like a one-off standalone issue where, they show Hydra from the perspective of one of their grunts. So, like...
There's a Bob agent of Hydra that I think was Deadpool's friend.
No, this guy's different. He's not associated with Deadpool.
Okay.
I want to say his name's Hank something. But anyway, like, he's, you know, like, it's him and his buddy. They're on, you know, guard duty, and then his buddy gets shot in the head by Nick Fury, and then he gets, like, knocked out. So then they show him at home the next morning eating breakfast with his kids. He's got a black eye. His wife's complaining, you know, like, she wants a bigger house. Did you ask for your promotion? And, you know, I didn't get around to it. And then, it was just funny that, you know, and then, like, you know, they go to, like, the same Little League games as, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. go to, because their kids are on the same teams, and so, like, he's got, like, a friendship with, what's his name? He's an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Oh, blonde guy. Oh, shit, I can't remember his name now. He was in the Hulk comic for a while. Shit. But anyway, you know, when they're, you know, at these softball games, you know, like, they're just, you know, they know that they're, you know, in opposite organizations, but when they're, you know, with their kids, they're, you know, just dads, right? And then when they meet, they gotta fight. I love that. I love that, like, you know, hilarity to it. Like, I think at one point he, like, tried applying with AIM, but he didn't get the job because he wasn't qualified or something, so he had to stay with Hydra. And then to get a raise with Hydra, he had to, like, sleep with Madame Hydra.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, like, you know, Madame Hydra at the time was married to MODOK or something. It was crazy. It was funny, but it was goofy, and yeah, like, it was just a one-off issue. But yeah, anyway, I digress. Ragnar, number 3 on your list, sir.
Okay, this one's perhaps a tad goofy, but I think everyone will agree it's awesome. Dead Ash and the Deadite Army from Army of Darkness. So much fun. Every time I watch that movie, and I watch that movie all the time still. I've seen it dozens of times. And every time, the last third of the movie, when the Deadite Army come together and they have their song with the drums and the bone flutes and they're marching on the castle, I go nuts for that. I just love it.
Nice.
It's cheesy. It's funny. It's a little bit morbid. I don't think it's scary, but perhaps you could say it's scary, maybe if you're a kid or something.
Yeah.
And it was all practical effects. It's not CGI. Those were all either really skinny people in suits or puppets. And I've seen that film dozens of times, and I always love that whole bit with the Deadites marching on the castle. So I got to throw a big shout out to that movie.
Nice. Excellent. All right, number 3 on my list, I'm going with the Dominion from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Nice.
The reason why, you know, they're actually the only Star Trek one I have on my list here. The reason why I picked them out of all the other Star Trek adversaries is because they're pretty much like the anti-Federation. You know, like something that always kind of bugged me for a long time was, you know, like the Federation and the Klingon Empire. And then, you know, the Klingon Empire is just Klingons. You know, the Romulan Empire is just Romulans. Cardassians, just Cardassians. You know, like the Federation.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it was like they were all just one race, you know, that made up these organizations. Whereas the Federation, you know, like you had Vulcans, you had Bolians, you had Betazoids, humans.
Yeah.
You know, like it was a multicultural organization. And you never saw that on Star Trek in an enemy until the Dominion showed up. Oh, well, I guess the Borg, but I mean they are singular, but they assimilate other races. But they become one.
But they become one race.
Yeah. Whereas the Dominion, you know, you got the Founders who are shapeshifters, you got the Vorta, you got the Jem'Hadar. The Vorta are like the management, the Jem'Hadar are the soldiers, and then they have other races that work for them. You know, they might not necessarily, you know, be up there, but they, you know, they live under Dominion rule. And the unfortunate thing, and we discovered this when we were doing our Deep Space Nine discussion episodes, is we never get to see the Dominion. In, like, we've seen, like, the Dominion ships, we've seen them join the Cardassian, with the Cardassians become members of the Dominion, we've seen them on Cardassia Prime, but we've never, you know, we've seen the Founders homeworld, we've never really seen the Dominion, in the Gamma Quadrant, like what they're, what, you know, how they operate there, you know, what their empire looks like there. You know, we can assume that you know, Sisko and other Federation ships that went into the Gamma Quadrant prior to the Dominion revealing themselves may have been in Dominion space, but didn't know they were in Dominion space yet. So we never get to see the full Dominion in Star Trek, and I'm really hoping one day, you know, when it's done right, that we will see that. You know, I'm hoping we don't see it in Star Trek Discovery, because that'd be very disappointing.
They would muck it up so bad.
Yeah. But yeah, the Dominion, they're just a great adversarial race. And, you know, the fact that the Founders can, you know, make themselves look like different people, and, you know, like one of them replaced General Martok for a while, you know, like they...
Yeah.
You know, they led the Tal Shiar and the Obsidian Order to join forces to basically destroy them. You know, like they're very powerful and cunning adversary to the Federation, so that's why I picked them. All right, Kevin, number two on your list, sir.
All right, so I purposely did number two and number one where they are. And this one is partly for me and partly for someone else here. If I said make it two so we can prepare for trouble, make that double, I am going to put Team Rocket from Pokemon. That's not So my kid got huge into Pokemon. He's not into it as much right now because he didn't want Snap, so there's not a new game for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They've played everything on Netflix so far and have not announced who's getting the next season yet. So it's just kind of like there's nothing going on Pokemon right now, so he's in a little break. But he watched, like, the brand new one, and then he got into previous seasons, and then he went all the way back to the beginning, and then he's playing some of the older games. And, I mean, I remember when Pokemon first came out, I had Red and Blue and would play that on my old, you know, original Game Boy for a while. I watched the cartoon when it first came out, but I wasn't into it enough to really know. You know, I knew the basic story, and I thought it was cool and fun, but I didn't really get into it until many years later when he did, and I'm loving it. And the more stuff I see with Team Rocket, like, one, they're just stupid and ridiculous and funny, but then, two, you have this evil organization in this world that kind of, like, it is almost like black market animal selling in a way. Like how, you know, we'll see stuff in the real world of someone that, you know, has a tiger in their mansion or something like that. You know, like something that they're not supposed to have by any means. And then you have this weird story with the two main Team Rocket ones, Jesse and James, where it's like, hey, we're bad guys, but we treat our Pokemon very well, just like good guys. And even though we're bad guys, that's our nemesis and no one else can mess with him. Like, it mm-hmm. becomes this weird code of honor thing with them too. And I just had a blast. And then out of nowhere, they'll have like this emotional episode featuring them. I'm like, these are the bad guys, and I'm near tears watching the stupid Pokemon thing because it's something that's happening here. And my kid getting all emotional too. He's like, that episode was rough, Dad. I'm like, yeah, it was. But of all the stupid things to affect me, and it's such a cool concept because they've had like, oh, it's Team Rocket. Well, is it our, you know, main two that we know from the cartoon, or is it just someone else from it? And it can just be someone else from the organization anytime, much like Marvel's AIM. You just say it's Team Rocket, shorthand. Okay, it's the bad guy. They're going to have some bad guy Pokemon we're going to fight later on. You know, kind of writes itself for it. But I have loved, and unfortunately falling down the rabbit hole of finding out more and more of the story of the main two there, of Jesse and James.
Awesome.
I love when the stupid, you know, and we mentioned Adventure Time earlier in mm-hmm. this episode. I love when stupid kid cartoon shows actually pack stuff in there for adults or for grown-up fans, and you're like, oh, God, I should be watching something, quote, important or mature instead of this, and I'm wrapped right into it.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's cool. Like you mentioned, Adventure Time, like that episode where they showed like the Ice King's backstory, like that was a gut punch. Yeah, it was so good, and it's like, you know, such a goofball character, so you know, and they, you know, made it so awesome.
Excellent. When Marceline's singing his notes, oh, wrecked me.
Yeah.
Absolutely wrecked me. But the songs, I did not hijack the show again.
That's okay.
Rebecca Sugar was a big part of those songs on Adventure Time. And then when she spun off into her own thing of Steven Universe, that's why we went and were like, oh, if she's doing this level music for Adventure Time, imagine what she does with her own stuff.
Yeah.
And then Steven Universe became a whole thing too. And that has episodes that just punch you in the heart too.
Yeah. Excellent.
Remember when cartoons were just cartoons?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they never did that episode on G.I. Joe where you found out Cobra Commander's tragic backstory.
No. No, they never did.
No. Would have been awesome, but they did sadly didn't do it.
Yeah. Hey, they could still do something with that someday.
True.
Yeah. All right. Ragnar, number two on your list.
All right. I'm going with number two here. I have a feeling my number one is going to come up between the two of you at some point, but I'm going to hold it out and we'll see. So number two for me, I got to go with House Lannister from Game of Thrones.
Nice.
With a shout out to House Bolton, because I have the, you know, house sigil tattooed on my leg. They're not my favorite house. They're not my favorite villains. They're great. I just love their sigil, and I wanted a Game of Thrones tattoo, and I didn't want to get the ones that I'd already seen on everybody else. So I got the Flayed Man, and I've only seen one other person with that tattoo, and he got it after he saw mine because he thought it was so cool.
Nice.
House Lannister, they were absolutely crushingly awesome villains. They were complex. There were times when you rooted for them. Maybe not Cersei. I'm not sure if there was ever a moment when I actually rooted for her. But every other member of that house at some point, whether they were on the good side or the bad, you know, quote-unquote good side, quote-unquote bad side, you rooted for them at some point and you hated them at some other point. And so that's fascinating and complex. And, yeah, they were just great villains. And also, the Game of Thrones House Lannister scotch, if you can pick it up, is just phenomenal.
Excellent. I'll give a, before I get into mine, I want to give a quick shout out to The World of Ice and Fire. It's a book that George R. R. Martin did. It's basically like the history of Westeros and some of the, you know, the world of Game of Thrones, some of the other continents and stuff. But House Lannister, you know, has such an interesting, well, like all, most of the houses have an interesting, you know, story, you know, like they figure that it, Lannister started from a guy named Lan the Clever, who, basically swindled Casterly Rock from the Casters. Casterly Rock is actually named after the house that built it, and they were the Casters. And Lan the Clever, basically, I can't remember exactly how he did it, but he swindled Casterly Rock and all the gold mines hidden underneath of Casterly Rock from them, and then he created the name Lannister. So it's like a combination of Lan the Clever and the Casters. And then I think he married some of the Casters as well. You know, but then they built Lannisport and you know, became one of the, you know, wealthiest houses in Westeros. And actually, when we did the Best of Bad, the original one, one of my villains was Tywin Lannister. Because I love Tywin, You know, he's such, yep. Has such an amazing character. Charles Dance is such an amazing actor. And I would say the show, you know, like it needed to happen, you know, when they killed him off. But the show just wasn't, it was missing something without Tywin. You know, he had that gravitas, that presence that, you know, when he entered a room, you know, everyone took notice. And those are some of my favorite scenes from Game of Thrones is with Tywin Lannister. Every scene he was in pretty much is amazing. And yeah, awesome backstory to House Lannister. You know, like they were actually almost in ruin, like their house. Like Tywin's dad, Tytus, basically was a joke. You know, like people borrowed money from him, they didn't pay him back, and they, you know,
that's right.
Yeah, they thumbed their nose at Tytus, and he was, you know, kind of a weak guy. And then his teenage son comes up, and it was like, you know what, we're gonna get our money back. And Tywin goes out, and he killed Castamere's. Because they have that's the Lannister song, is the Reigns of Castamere, which was actually written by Tywin Lannister.
Yeah.
And basically he wiped out an entire house. You know, basically they, like when his army came to their castle and they all hid in caverns underneath the castle, and basically he just sealed up the doors to the caverns and basically opened a dam and basically drowned them all. And that's just how badass he was. Like, you know, you owe us money, you're not paying us back, you're gonna die now. And then he turned House Lannister from a house in decline to, you know, the most prominent house in a Game of Thrones. But yeah, but I digress. Excellent choice, Ragnar. That was really good. All right, number two on my list is the Galactic Empire from.
Yeah, that was my number one.
It's the Galactic Empire, not from the Foundation trilogy, but from Star Wars, the original Star Wars trilogy. And I really think George Lucas got that name, the Galactic Empire, from Isaac Asimov's Foundation trilogy. Now that, you know, I haven't read the Foundation trilogy yet, but basically it's the story of the Galactic Empire, like, you know, this empire that's in decline. And it is a show that's, I think, premiering on Apple Plus. September, I think. So I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, if there's some similarities between that Galactic Empire and this Galactic Empire. But the Galactic Empire I'm referring to is from Star Wars. So, you know, you got Darth Sidious, you got Darth Vader, you got Grand Admiral Thrawn, you got Moff Gideon from The Mandalorian, you got Grand Moff Tarkin from the original Star Wars, you got the Inquisitors, as we saw them in Star Wars Rebels. You got the Stormtroopers, even though they can't hit much.
Yeah.
You know, like, I still love the Stormtroopers. And most people do. Like, I remember, you know, one time we were in West Edmonton Mall, and the 501st was marching around the mall. And my wife got so excited. She's like, oh, my God. You know, like, those are those troopers from Star Wars. Yeah, they're Stormtroopers. You know, she was pretty excited about that. You know, like, the Empire's just, you know, like I said, you know, a good property will have good villains. And just like, you know, like I was talking about Tywin Lannister, you know, like, those are some of my favorite scenes from Game of Thrones. The Empire, those are some of my favorite scenes from the original trilogy. Every time we saw the Empire, you know, when we saw Darth Vader choking out a guy at a, you know, at a, you know, a team meeting, you know, and I just think that's badass. Cause you know, I've been to a few team meetings where I wanted to choke somebody out, but sadly I don't have the force. But Darth Vader does. So he does that. You know, someone says something he doesn't like, he just gives them, you know, a little choke. And he, yeah, like, I just, the Empire, you know, like, they're such good, diverse villains, you know, like, every time we see the Empire, especially in Empire Strikes Back, because I think that's the most we see of the Empire. You know, I love all those scenes, you know, between Vader and Admiral Piett, you know, when he kills Admiral Ozzel. You know, it's just great. And the general, I can't remember his name, but he's also Grandmeister Pycelle on Game of Thrones.
Oh yeah, he's great.
Yeah, great actor. Yeah, the Empire's just fantastic. And
Julian something.
Yes, Julian Glover. Yes, Julian Glover.
Glover, yeah. I met him, so yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he was at the Saskatoon Comic Expo, so I got a Grandmaster Pycelle autograph.
Nice.
And of course, he was in the first Indiana Jones film, too. He was
The third one.
The third one.
The third one. He was the collaborator.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Was the third one. Donnelly. I think. I can't remember. No, Walter Donovan. That was his name, Walter Donovan.
Yeah.
He was the one that chose poorly at the end of the movie.
Yeah. He makes the giant, gaudy gold one covered in diamonds. And
But yeah, no, like the Empire is just you know, a fantastic adversary. In the prequel movies, that is one thing that I really missed, was not seeing the Empire. And in the sequel movies, too, because the First Order, you know, they might look similar to the Empire, but they ain't the Empire.
They sucked.
You know, and to go off on a quick tangent here, you know, I've recently watched some YouTube videos about The Rise of Skywalker, because I can't bring myself to actually watch the movie again.
Never again, man.
And one YouTuber made this really good point. So at the end of the movie, you see them take out the Final Order. You know, that secret fleet of Star Destroyers that could, you know, each one of them could destroy a planet, blah, blah, blah. So they take them out. What about the First Order? Like, they're still out there at the end of these movies. Like, you know, everyone's celebrating. The First Order wasn't there during that final battle, and they were kicking the Resistance ass prior to this. So at the end of the sequel movies, it's implied that, you know, the Resistance has won and everyone's happy and celebrating. And you even see, you know, a Star Destroyer above Endor that was there for some reason. And you see the Ewoks jumping around again. But it's like, the First Order's still out there, though. You know, like, I think, you know, in the midst of all this bad writing, the writers forgot about it.
Oh, man, it was, it just makes me, like, in the theater watching it, I just got angry. It was so poorly written and so poorly conceived.
Yes.
And it was just like, what is every stupid thing that we can throw in for no reason at all that will maybe, you know, maybe make the fans happy on some level?
Yeah.
And it was like they did so much of that that they forgot to actually make a movie that was worth watching.
Yeah. But I mean,
like, you know, like even Lando Calrissian shows up and you're like, eh, whatever, man. I just want to leave.
Yeah.
How do you fuck that up? How do you get to the point that you could bring in a character of that level and that cool factor and still make it lame?
Yeah, agreed. So getting back to the Empire, like with the Mandalorian, you know, like they really did the Empire justice, like when they brought in Moff Gideon, you know, because I'm drawing a blank on the actor's name, Giancarlo Esposito, who plays Moff Gideon. He's just a great villain actor. You know, he's Gus Fring in Breaking Bad. You know, he's what's his name in the Boys.
Mr. Edgar.
Even though we haven't really seen him do anything in The Boys, I know he's got something.
He was one of the
still one of the only people that put
Homelander.
Oh, yeah, I was gonna say knockoff Captain America, Homelander. He was one of the only ones that put Homelander in his place.
Yep,
which is pretty impressive for a character that is, you know, essentially like unstoppable.
Yep. So yeah, he's such a great villain, and you know, the Mandalorian did the Empire right. You know, like that one little Star Destroyer that he has was, in my mind, more intimidating than the Final Order in Rise of Skywalker.
Oh man, that was just when that came on, I actually laughed. Like when I saw that for the first time, because I'm like, this is so unbelievably stupid.
Yeah.
Then I started laughing in the theater. Yeah. Just like this is just so ridiculous.
Yeah. And then Moff Gideon introduces the Death Troopers, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, like there's so many good, like Grand Admiral Thrawn. I know we're gonna be getting a live action version of him. He was great in exciting. Yeah, he was great in Rebels, and even the original Timothy Zahn novels, like I just love the little nuances of his character. You know, like basically he wanted to like restore the Empire. Like as far as, you know, like he didn't call the New Republic the New Republic. He called them the Rebels. Like he never once called them the New Republic, because he believed, and kind of rightfully so, that the Empire was the legitimate government of the galaxy. Which they were, you know, like, so he's not, you know, Grand Admiral Thrawn is not wrong. He's actually right, even though he's the bad guy, you know. But yeah, just a great organization of villains, you know, the uniforms. I love all the little things, like they got those, like, sticks, you know, that they can plug into the computer and gives them access to stuff, and yeah. Fantastic.
And, you know, and I love that, like, we know so much more about technology now. Like, for example, in Star Trek, every time they make a new Star Trek, they update the technology to reflect more what we think it would actually be like.
Yeah.
They didn't do that in Star Wars. They still had the old hokey computers with weird screens that don't make any sense, and it's all controlled by gears and levers and buttons and switches, and I love that. That's how we were introduced to that universe, and I love that that universe still looks like that now, as opposed to them being like, you know, oh, no, they would, you know, the replicator would actually be a 3D printer, and, like, you know, I love that they didn't go that route. They're like, nope, this is the look, and we're going to stick with that.
And I love that the Mandalorian still keeps that tradition. Like, they don't try and update anything.
No, the special effects were perhaps better, but it still looks like the old films. You can watch the old trilogy and then watch The Mandalorian, and you're like, yeah, this is a total continuation.
Well, isn't there stuff that, I almost said we. I'll say Americans. I think there was an article years ago about how certain government programs, agencies, whatever, are still using disk drives. And the point was because it's contained, so they know that it can't be hacked. Yeah. So, I mean, you could even make that point for the Star Wars world of, like, listen, there's so much going on. Yeah, this stuff might look old, this tech, but we know it works, and we know no one can mess with it, and we know that it's reliable when we're out in deep space.
Yep. Like,
that would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, as a general rule, they don't spend a lot of time in Star Wars trying to convince you that it's real.
True.
You know, like in Star Trek, they always do work hard to try to present it as, you know, the limits of the science we have today suggest that it would work this way. And they try to sell you on that. And that's awesome. And I am not against that at all. But in the Star Wars universe, they don't do that. They're just like, yeah, we have this technology. You don't need an explanation of how it works. You just need to know that we have it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and in the Star Wars universe, that, for the most part, works, and that's all we need.
Well, that's like the Kirby art style, too. Like, you don't, I don't need to explain how this works. I just need you to think it works.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. Well, Ragnar, if the Empire is your number one, is there anything you want to add? We'll start with number one with you, because you said the Empire was yours.
Yeah, I was saving the Empire. I mean, I can do a couple shout-outs. I loved the Cylons in Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, you know, the newer Battlestar Galactica, the Ronald D. Moore stuff. The old Cylons are fun, and it was neat to see them show up a couple of times. But as a whole, they're kind of hokey.
Mm-hmm.
The new ones were pretty great. Some of them were pretty attractive. And by the end of the series, they were pretty cool because, you know, there were good ones and there were bad ones. And there were good ones that did bad things and bad ones that did good things. So they were very well-rounded and believable characters, even though they were supposed to be machines. So, you know, we should give a shout-out to them. The reason they didn't make my list is I just thought they were in a way too similar to the Borg.
Mm.
Like, I know they're not, but I'm like, well, you know, there's some overlap there.
Yeah.
So we could definitely throw a shout out to the Cylons of Battlestar Galactica. Oh, geez, I had another one, but it's gone now. But anyways, the Galactic Empire was my number one choice. So yeah, there you go.
Excellent. Kevin, number one on your list, sir.
All right, so it wasn't going to be Star Wars. The Empire was not on my list. That is a good call, though. A lot of good calls on this. But I am going for a nostalgia pick, something from the 80s, something that I loved. And it is a group that was brought together and members coming in and out, and their entire purpose was to defeat one man. So I'm going with the Heenan family. During the Hulk Hogan era of WWF.
Nice.
That is awesome, man.
King Kong Bundy, Hercules, the Islanders, Haku, Andre the Giant, Big John Studd, Rick Rude, like the Brainbusters. I mean, there's just so many amazing people. Oh, Mr. Perfect. And of course, Bobby Heenan. Front and center leading it, and most of it is here's my opponent of the week to defeat Hulk Hogan, but it was also just a way to get Bobby on TV being one of the most entertaining people ever on TV, not just for wrestling but like for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we mentioned I kind of started the show with like, you know, now that you're an adult, stuff, you know, you hear your parents' voice coming out or stuff makes sense. Now that I'm adult, that's a person that I realize how smart and how funny, and I'm watching some things from when I was a kid that went completely over my head. I'm just like, oh, man, there's a lot. And the funny thing is, and we've all seen many shows where it's like, maybe the villain becomes the hero at the end or is misguided or whatever. There's a lot of stuff I'm watching and I'm like, you know, Heenan's not really saying anything incorrect here. Like, to say Mr. Perfect is a better wrestler than Hulk Hogan is flat out true.
Mm-hmm.
You yep. know, to call Ric Flair the real world champion, yeah. I can't argue with it. Like, there's so many things for that. But I loved when we were doing the other podcast, House Show podcast, we're doing Saturday night's main event until we didn't have access to it anymore. But to see like the big, giant, scary villain of the week going up against Hogan is so much fun. And of course, we all got into it then. It's no different mm-hmm. than watching G.I. Joe or He-Man or Transformers. Here's the bad guy of the week. Here's our hero. Is he going to use his ridiculously large 80s muscles to save the day? Probably.
Excellent. Well,
I got to say, man, that's a great pick.
Yeah.
That's so much fun.
Well, I'm going to go off on a quick tangent and just add a couple honorable mentions, wrestling related, as Kevin was speaking, I was thinking. You know, even though I don't really think he's a bad guy, but he was portrayed as a bad guy enough, Rowdy Roddy Piper.
God, yeah.
Yeah, I love him. Again, one of the sad things that I never got to see him in real life. I went to a wrestling show in 2003. That's when he made his comeback after WrestleMania. And he was supposed to come to a house show in Edmonton, and then he didn't. He made some comments. I forget. He was on a talk show or something. He made some comments about steroids and stuff. And then basically got kicked out of WWE again at that time. So unfortunately, I never got to see him, even though I really wanted to. And then I'll just throw it out there, Mr. McMahon. I love the fact that Vince McMahon, you know, makes fun of himself, you know, when he plays, you know, the bad guy, you know, and he really does make fun of himself a lot, because there's a lot of times, you know, whatever skit he's in or whatever, he looks like an idiot, even though he really is not an idiot in real life. You know, I think Vince McMahon's hilarious as a bad guy. But anyway, number one on my list, again, shout out to Larry Hama. It's Cobra. They are, like I said, you know, a good villain sometimes I think it works, you know, even better than a good guy. And for the original G.I. Joe, especially in the comic books, like when they really delve into like the inner workings, I found, you know, I was more drawn to Cobra, you know, like even though they were the bad guys and they were doing bad things, I found them more interesting to read and watch.
Yeah.
You know, like Cobra Commander, you know, I love that voice actor. He also did Starscream on Transformers. You know, he was amazing. I love the fact that he changes his masks up every once in a while. Destro, you know, number two in the organization, even though he's just really a hired gun. You know, again, fascinating villain, you know. Zartan, the Baroness, Dr. Mindbender, Major Blood, Storm Shadow, Tomox and Zamot, and then Serpent Serpentor later on. Like, Cobra's just full of these interesting villains that are constantly, you know, doing bad things, stabbing each other in the back, but yet, you know, united in their love of world domination. Cobra, in my opinion, it's just, I love those, that group of villains. And I again, shout out to Larry Hama, because he's the one that gave, you know, all these characters their backstories. And, you know, shout out to 80s toy lines, you know, like, you know, I got on my list, I got Skeletor's Evil Warriors, but I also have the Horde and the Snake Men as honorable mentions in my number five spot. And then I got Cobra. They're all from toy lines that, you know, like they were selling toys and they made these really interesting characters with these interesting designs to sell toys. And then guys like, you know, Larry Hama, you know, fleshed them out and ran with it and gave us these memorable villains that, you know, like I said, like when I watch G.I. Joe, I'm really, like, honestly, like, I don't get me wrong, like, you know, I like Duke and Scarlet you know, the other guys, Snake Eyes and whatnot, but it's Cobra that really draws me to that show, you know, because they're such interesting villains. So yeah, that's why they are number one on my list.
Nice.
All right, so let's move on to our brain candy segment. And for this segment, if this is your first time listening to our podcast, this is a segment where we talk about something that we've been watching, reading, listening to, whatever. You know, we call it brain candy. I don't have a lot of stuff for our new segment. So I got a few extra brain candies here that I want to throw out there. So first up, I'm going to go with The Quiet Place Part 2.
Yeah,
I watched it with my wife a couple weeks ago. I liked The Quiet Place, the first one. This one was also equally as good, I think. You know, an interesting premise that, you know, our world is invaded by these creatures that, you know, kill us, but they're blind. You know, they're drawn to the sound, so you have to be quiet. Otherwise, they will come and get you. You know, this one, you know, it's written and directed by John Krasinski. His wife, Emily Blunt, is the lead in this movie. And, yeah.
I'd say the daughter's the lead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little girl.
Yeah, she, and I mean, yeah, like the cast is fantastic. Like, I say Emily Blunt because, you know, she's, you know, the more famous one. And also, what's his name there from,
Cillian
Murphy. Yeah. Yeah, I've heard people call him Killian. I've always referred to him as Cillian.
I think it's pronounced Killian, but I'm not 100% on that.
Yeah. But, you know, great actor, and he was great in this film as well. You know, he takes kind of like the male father figure spot in this film. And apparently they're making a third one, so it's going to be a trilogy.
Yeah, so if I can just jump in for a second.
Absolutely, yep.
I have two complaints about it.
Okay.
But as a whole, I thought they were both excellent films.
Yeah.
My first complaint is, they go on and on and on about how these things are unkillable and they're completely indestructible and they can tear through metal and they're bulletproof and all this. And then at the end of the day, they finally discover that if you shoot them when they lift their smell flaps, they die.
Yeah.
So they made it, you know, they used the girl's hearing aid and it makes a sound that drives the things crazy. That was a cool idea.
Yeah.
But making it that all you then have to do is shoot them, I'm like, there's no way that the army didn't figure out how to do this already.
Yeah.
So that's one complaint I have, was that they should have made it the sound kills them and left it at that and not the sound hurts them and then you shoot them and they die. Because it's like, well, then snipers could kill them. And, you know, and anyways. So that was one complaint I had. And the other complaint I had was that the second film didn't feel like a complete story and obviously is the middle part of a trilogy.
Yeah.
Because it was great. It was well written. It was well acted. Well shot. But the story, when you got to the end, you're like, oh, that's it? That it's over? Oh, they're definitely making a third one here, aren't they?
Yeah. I
to a certain extent, that's not a complaint, because if you like it, it means that there's a pretty darn good chance there'll be one more.
But, I completely agree with you, Ragnar. Like, that's actually how I felt. I was like, oh, it's the end. You know, because when they started the credits, I'm like, oh, that's the end. You know.
Yeah, it just didn't quite feel like enough story, I guess.
Yeah. But I'm wondering if the pandemic may have had a hand in that.
I bet you it did, man.
It's possible.
I bet. Yeah. Because we saw that with lots of other film and TV productions, that the story they wanted to bring you is not the story they ended up giving you.
Yeah.
Like, as an odd example of that, I'm watching this show on Netflix called Car Masters, where they take rusted out classic cars and transform them into, you know, crazy street cars.
Mm-hmm.
And even in that show, towards the end of the show, as they're building to the climax, or they make this crazy car and they're going to sell it for a huge amount of money, the pandemic hits and they were unable to sell the car because they couldn't take it to the auction because the auction got canceled because of COVID.
Yeah.
So just like, yeah, it, you know, it wormed its way into everything. And some shows, like that show, chose to talk about it, but lots of productions just went, well, this is the best we can do with what we got, and just left it at that, right?
Yep.
So you're absolutely right. They could have had to shorten it or cut it or something because of the pandemic. That is entirely possible.
Yeah. But speaking of John Krasinski, I just finished the other day season one of Jack Ryan on Amazon Prime. So this is the character that was created in Tom Clancy novels, Hunt for Red October, Clear and Present Danger, Patriot Games, Some of All Fears. So this character has been played by Alec Baldwin, Harrison Ford, probably most famously, Ben Affleck.
Didn't Ben Affleck play?
Yeah, which I liked that movie. It was good.
It was totally good.
Yeah, it's unfortunate they didn't do more. And then Chris Pine just did one in 2016. I haven't seen that though.
No, I have not seen that one.
But John Krasinski plays Jack Ryan in this television series. And, you know, I'd heard about it, but I never got around to watching it. But I had some time this last week, so it's like, I'll watch it. It was one of those, as soon as I started watching, it's like I didn't want to stop. It was good. I really liked it.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, those movies, I haven't read a Tom Clancy novel, to be honest with you, but I've watched those movies, and I've enjoyed all those movies. So I don't know what took me so long to realize this would be up my alley. But season one was excellent. I'm starting season two. About halfway through the first episode now. And then I just found out that season three is a go. That Amazon Prime has greenlit a season three.
Nice.
My only complaint so far with season two, for what little I've seen, is I found out through the internet that the actress who plays his love interest in season one is not in season two. And she was so good in season one.
That was a huge part of why I didn't like season two as much, as I just thought, like, well, what happened to her? She was awesome, and I assumed she was going to become the mother of his children, and then...
Yeah. And she should have, damn it.
Some new chick who's... the new chick's super hot, but it was just kind of like, I like the old girl better.
Her name's Abby Cornish. In Sucker Punch, I think, and she was in the Limitless movie. Super beautiful. She's got some curves, which I like. I like that.
Oh yeah. Me too, man.
And really beautiful. She reminds me a lot of Julie Benz, the actress Julie Benz. But she was excellent in Jack Ryan. Oh, and on a side note, she's a rapper, apparently, in Australia. Oh,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, I forget what her rap name is.
Yeah, I think I did actually know that.
Yeah, so I listened to a song of hers on YouTube. I actually liked it. I was like, she's actually really good. But you know, it was a great series. It was a great first season. I really liked that the guy. I can't remember the character's name now. The actor who plays the James Earl Jones Morgan Freeman character. I can't remember it. He's Jack Ryan's boss.
He was played by Darth Vader, James Earl Jones in the Harrison Ford movies.
And in this,
yeah, he's great. This film, he's great.
Yeah, this series. Yeah. This version of him, he's way more badass. Great actor. I'm gonna look him up real quick.
I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but I remember as soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh, that guy is perfect for this role.
Oh, Wendell Pierce. Yeah, James Greer is his name, the character's name. And yeah, he's so good. He was in a couple seasons of Ray Donovan, I think. He's one of those actors that you see him in lots of different things. But you can't.
Yeah, he's been in tons of stuff, but this was one of his bigger roles.
Yeah, and I love the fact that he's like a badass. He was in The Money Pit. He was in Malcolm X, Bullworth. Just going over some of the bigger ones here.
He was in The Wire. That's where I knew him from.
Horrible Bosses. He's in Bad Moms. He's in A Man Called Hawk. That would have been with Avery Brooks. He's in Law and Order, a few Law and Order episodes. Yeah, he's in a lot of stuff. The Wire. A lot of Law and Order here. He's such a great actor. I'm sure he was in Ray Donovan. I don't see Ray Donovan. Oh, yeah, here he is, Ray Donovan, yeah. He played, what's-his-name's parole officer, I think. Such a good actor. Yeah, great, great season. Highly recommend it. I'm watching season two, looking forward to getting through that. And hopefully season three won't be far behind.
Sorry, I got to interrupt you for a sec. So, if you've ever read the Terry Pratchett books, I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're... Terry Pratchett is a British author. He's deceased now. And he sort of did, mm-hmm. like, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but yep. set in a fantasy world.
Yep.
They've made a few of his books come to life on the screen, and there's been tons of them that for years have been rumored to come out but never did. And they're working on a show about The Watch, which is one of my favorite sets of characters from the Discworld books, and he's going to voice Death in those.
Oh. Hmm.
Which should be really cool, because Death is one of the funniest and most interesting characters in the series, so that's super cool.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah.
Real quick, just before we recorded this episode, I watched the first episode of What If, the animated series from Marvel on Disney Plus. This one was about Captain Carter. I really liked it. I thought it was great. I thought the animation was really solid. I'd heard on another podcast they were complaining, saying the animation looked bad, but I thought it looked amazing. I thought it was really good. You know, they got a lot of the actors from Captain America: The First Avenger back, except for Captain America. Chris Evans.
Oh, no, he wouldn't come back, eh?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what the issue was. And Tommy Lee Jones. But they kill off Tommy Lee Jones' character without him having to speak. So it kind of worked out. Dominic Cooper was back as Stark. Sebastian Stan was back. Dum-Dum Dugan, that actor, was back. They didn't get what's his name as Red Skull, but they got the guy who did the voice of Red Skull in the Infinity War and Endgame,
which was close enough that it worked.
Yeah. And he's great. He was on The Walking Dead. I can't remember his character's name. He was fantastic as the Red Skull in those movies. Like, you know, I really hope that in future Marvel movies they bring the Red Skull back and have him play the Red Skull, because he's really good. Solid first episode. I really enjoyed it. I think it looked incredible. And last but not least, a quick shout out for a comic book that was released this week, and that's Batman 89. So basically, this is the continuation of the original Tim Burton film. And it's really the story of Harvey Dent, as played by Lando Calrissian. Billy Dee Williams, yes. Because he played Harvey Dent in the original Batman movie.
Sure did.
So, I mean, they've changed some things up story-wise, they did it for the original movie, too. So, I understand that. And I don't know if it's a nitpick or if it's actually a good thing. I'm kind of torn. The way they draw Harvey Dent, he does look a lot like Billy Dee Williams. But
cool.
The way they draw Bruce Wayne, he does not look like Michael Keaton. And the guy that they draw Commissioner Gordon, it's not like the Commissioner Gordon from... The movie. He actually looks like the Commissioner Gordon from the College Humor short Batman funnies. Oh. You know, like he looks like that guy. All
right.
Alfred looked pretty good, I think. But I don't know. Maybe it's a good thing that they don't look like those actors, because that can be off-putting in a comic book, too. Like, when they try and make Luke Skywalker look like Mark Hamill too much, it doesn't... It looks off, if you know what I mean. So I guess maybe it's for the better. And I'm sure it's probably, like you know, if they made Bruce Wayne look like Michael Keaton, they would have to pay Michael Keaton, right? So, you know, that's probably why they don't want to do it. Whereas, like, Billy Dee Williams, maybe he's getting a cut out of this. I don't know. But it was a good first issue. It, you know, wasn't stellar by any means. But this is, I think, a 5 or 6 part miniseries. So I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with it. And because I love that original Batman movie. It's one of my favorites of all time. All right. So, Kevin, what do you have this week for Brain Candy?
All right, so I can't remember if I mentioned it on last episode, but if I didn't, I'll bring it up. But I finally finished Invincible.
Oh, nice.
And I had it, I don't know how or why or what. I know I read the first volume of the comic forever ago, because it's sitting here in my collection.
Yeah.
But I guess I didn't retain enough of it. So I'm watching the cartoon on Prime just going nuts. I knew one thing coming, because it's a big thing, and it's made its way into my knowledge through, you know, websites or articles or whatever. But everything else on the entire show is brand new to me. God, that's so good.
Nice.
It's so good. And just violent as hell, but necessary, I'd say. Like, it's showing... You know, Kirkman doesn't shy away from violence for Walking Dead, for zombies, and it makes sense. But honestly, when you got superheroes and supervillains and people that can, you know, tear the world in half, bad things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't shy away from that at all. But plus, there's just an amazing story to it, too. And what got me, I'm like, boy, it's a short season. There's some filler episodes here. That doesn't really make sense. Well, it's character development, it's character building.
Yep.
And then, damn, if everything doesn't come into play at the end, and you're like, oh, my God, that wasn't a filler episode. That is very important now here in the finale.
Yep.
Oh, so good. I finally, just because life has been crazy, I finally finished Falcon Winter Soldier earlier today.
Oh, good, man.
Finally. God, that was such a good ending, which everyone's seen already for a while.
But it's still a good ending.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to do Black Widow soon, and then into Loki, and then into What If. I'm going to try.
Yeah, there's so much out there.
So much. And I mean, that's stuff that I love. Like, I got to just make the time for it. But I'm actually, like, once fans came back, I've been enjoying wrestling again, for the most part.
Nice.
And... WWE is WWE right now, and I might bring that up in our next segment. But AEW, All Elite Wrestling, the big rumor is that they have signed some people, and they will be debuting soon, either for the pay-per-view or for a big TV event. But the rumors are rampant that Daniel Bryan is jumping over and that CM Punk's going to make his return.
Hmm.
And so I've just been watching every week. I'm like, they just got a hell of a show every week. And they will just bring in random unsigned talent to help make their talent look good. And if you make an impression, we'll sign you too.
Yeah.
Like, they are just so much fun. There's a kid that was in... Kid? I mean, he's in his 30s now, probably. But he was in the same town that I was in. So I've known who he is forever and watched him, like, drive to... the next big city to get wrestling training and pay his own way and get hurt and not know how he's going to pay his bills because he was hurt wrestling and now can't do his day job and all. And he had a match on there to just show up and see how he looked, you know, like so much fun to see. And the fans are such a part that it was absolutely necessary. Like, I never realized how much I've gone to shows where, like, barely anyone's there, but at least someone was there.
Mm-hmm.
Have a year of, like, where, you know, there's no fans or they have TV monitors for it.
Yeah.
Just not the same by any means. They tried. They did everything they could think of. They tried. I give them credit for trying. But now that people are back, oh, God, it just makes it. And, I mean, we'll see with everything exchanging again how it goes.
Yeah.
It's pissed me off. I got convention in September and a wrestling show in October, and I really want them to happen.
Yeah, man. We feel you on that one.
Yeah, I hear you. But, no, that's awesome. Ragnar, what do you have this week for brain candy?
Well, I got an old one and a new one. So the new one is, of course, I finished the series Loki. I won't give any spoilers away. I will simply say it was awesome. I certainly enjoyed it. The ending kind of sucks in the sense of it's not the real ending and you know there's more story. And now you just got to wait for that story to catch up. And I'm super excited to see more of it and see where the character of Loki and the new characters that we have met, where things go, because there's a lot of possibilities on where it could go. And yeah, it was very enjoyable. And if you like the character of Loki in the Marvel films, then you definitely better watch that show.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is that I just finished about maybe a week or two ago the book of Ready Player One. Oh, now, nice. Full disclosure, I have not seen the film, and I've been told by people who have read the book and seen the film that the two are worlds apart. But the book was phenomenal, and it is not something that I thought I would be into. I read the back of the book, and I went, I don't know, man. And it was awesome, and I haven't been able to stop thinking about it. And I've read two books since I finished it, and I still can't get it out of my head. So I can't recommend that one enough. It is just a killer story. And of course, I am going to try to track down the movie to watch it now to see what that's like. But the book was amazing. And if you like 80s pop culture and dystopian future, it's for you, because it's literally a blending of those two things.
Awesome. I recently downloaded the audiobook because our friend over at Trek 1701, Curtis, recommended the audiobook. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Awesome. Because yeah, like you said, like I've read the back of it, and I'm like, you know,
man, this sounds terrible.
Yeah,
but no, it's so good.
Awesome.
And I mean, of course, I grew up in the 80s, so I love 80s pop culture. I didn't get every reference, but I got enough of them that I'm like, cool. And it's basically like, dystopian future with a all-encompassing video game version of Facebook, essentially. And the story alternates between what's actually happening in the horrifically dystopian and totally imaginable future world, and then this crazy, you know, online world where everything is possible. And it didn't sound good to me, but I started reading it and I started reading it at like just after midnight, and I stayed up till 4 a.m. reading it the first night because it was so good.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you'll be checking out the sequel right away, or?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's
Ready Player Two.
I got two other books I have to get through first because I promised other people I would read them and they want to discuss them with me.
Okay.
And then I'm all about trying to track down a copy of that.
Nice. Excellent. All right. Well, let's move on to the end of the episode, which is our Enders segment. So this is our news and discussion portion of the podcast. And Ragnar and I don't really have anything, but Kevin had something maybe that he wanted to discuss. So Kevin, take it away.
Alright, so two things here. I'm not entirely sure for the two of you for work, for investments, for experiences, for anything like that. So maybe either of you would have a unique perspective on it. But we are really speculating that Vince McMahon's going to sell WWE. They have had massive talent cuts over and over and over again. Last Friday, nearly a week ago at the time of taping this, they fired like 10 people off of NXT while SmackDown was happening live. And people that like literally just held titles, like were just in a spotlight position. So we're all like, okay, that's kind of weird. They got rid of Braun Strowman. They got rid of Bray Wyatt. They've gotten rid of named people. And the theory is that they have a new person coming in that's just like, who's this? What's their deal? You know, and just cutting people immediately. Not even worried about it, not considering it, you know, anything. Just, what's their deal? If I don't think they're worth the money, then we're getting rid of them. There's a big rumor that Vince, there was a email, I don't know if it was from Vince McMahon or who, that said, here's the new NXT, only people that we think could main event a WrestleMania, quote, no midgets. So we're all thinking that, like, I mean, because he looks old. He looks like crap. So fans are thinking he's going to just sell it to some company. Probably NBC would make a lot of sense. And have them run it and just give him and his family a giant payoff. Then they don't have to deal with it anymore. And just buy the name of WWE.
And sorry, who did you say you think he's going to sell it to?
NBC.
NBC. Yeah.
NBC would make a lot of sense because WWE already in the States shut down their streaming service and partnered up with NBC's streaming service. But you got the NBC deal going back to Saturday Night's Main Event in the 80s. Like, they've always had a friendship, a familiarity, whatever. And Raw, for the most part, besides, like, a brief... And it sounds silly, but considering the length of Raw, brief, like, 5 years, maybe, when they were on TNN, they've been on USA, which is owned by NBC. We're all waiting to see that.
So, do you think this is just because he wants to get out of it, or is this, like, because they lost a bunch of money, do you think, or...?
Oh, no, they're making more money now, because when pandemic hit, they still had all the TV money coming in, they still had all the merchandise money coming in, but they didn't have the expense of travel. So they saved a ton of money not traveling.
I suppose. I thought maybe they were, you know, like the house shows, you know, like the audience was making up so much more money for them. Maybe took a hit, but.
The new TV deals, especially that Fox deal, are so lucrative that they were making more profits. And a lot of the house show goes as a cut to the wrestlers. Here's your money for doing this tour and whatever. So now you don't have to pay them that money out. So they're making less money, but then they're also not paying because they all got to pay their own expenses. So, we're not paying car rental. We're not paying hotel. We're not having all this extra wear and tear in our bodies. So even though we're actually bringing home less a year, we're actually kind of ahead.
I know of other businesses on a much smaller scale that had that same thing. Yes, we made way less money, but we spent so much less money, we're actually further ahead. It was not the case for my small business, but I know other businesses that was the case for.
Well, and the assumption with releasing so many people and changing so many things is the less overhead, the less cost you have, the more profit potential there is, the more lucrative they look.
On paper.
Yeah.
When they're making the sales pitch, it costs this much to operate and it generates this, so... you're probably right, man.
So we've all been debating that. And then another thing I saw, just to throw another news thing in there, my store was sold out, but I really was debating getting the Batman Urban Legends this week to see Tim Drake's story.
Oh, okay. I heard about that, yeah.
Tim Drake is out with a friend and kind of ends up admitting, like, having it pointed out. I didn't get to read it, but sounds like in part of a longer conversation, he kind of stumbled across, like, oh, hey, I might have feelings for my friend here that aren't just friendship.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that was in me, and now that I've said it, I think I need to figure this out. So, of course, the headlines is Robin is bisexual. I'm like, oh my god. Everyone's thinking it's Dick Grayson. They're thinking we're changing the Robin character from the beginning. Like, jeez. But then I'm like, it's Tim Drake. It's Tim Drake. Like, if you told me, hey, who's Tim Drake's girlfriend? I'd say, I don't know. Has he ever had one? Like, that's not a sexuality in the comics I've ever known to be explored or talked about. So he can be whatever he wants to be. Like, if you all of a sudden said Dick Grayson's bi, I'd be like, okay, like, where are you going with this? Because he's been with Starfire for forever. He's been with Batgirl for forever. Like, we have a history of him with romantic and long-term, comics-wise, relationships with women. Tim Drake, blank slate as far as I know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because you say, like, because the headline was Robin. When I think of Robin now, I think of Damian Wayne. Like, I don't even think of, like, Dick Grayson, because I think of Dick Grayson as Nightwing. And Tim Drake as, what is he, Red Robin now? And then
Red Robin now, I think,
and then Jason Todd's Red Hood. So, but, no, it's definitely clickbait for sure.
Yeah, because look at when we had the 900 number for Jason Todd.
Yep.
The general public, the general press was like, DC kills Robin. And of course, they're making everyone think it's Dick Grayson, not like explaining comics. Hey, the one you remember played by Burt Ward grew up in the comics. Now he's Nightwing and he's doing this. No, they just put Robin in the title. They're not going to the details. So, yeah, I already saw clickbait. So, oh, Robin's bisexual now. I'm like, you're not even telling the truth for this. You're just getting the article, the hits. And I get it. It's a business, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm like, that's very interesting. And honestly, as big as the Bat family is, you're going to have someone that checks that box. Like, he's got... They did a comic recently. I think it was in, like, Detective 1000 or 1027, maybe. I forget which one. But everyone in the Bat family apparently is in, like, a group message thing, and everyone gets a text. We need to meet on the roof at this time.
Yeah.
I hadn't read it. I just found out about it, like, a couple weeks ago, and I need to get it now, and my shop doesn't have it. So I'm going... Hopefully, I'm still going to a convention next month. I'm going to try to get it. But for Ragnar, for any listeners there, because, Chris, you sound like you know about it, the whole Bat family shows up. So every Robin, Batgirl...
Yep.
Batwoman, Catwoman, like everyone that's connected with him shows up on the rooftop, and they're all like, "Oh God, what's happening?" And some of them are like, "Bruce is going to retire, or he's going to give up the mantle and have it be, you know, one of the boys." Red Hood thinks he's getting kicked out of the family because he's such a screw up, and he's just like everyone's trying to figure out what the hell's going on. Catwoman's being kind of sarcastic with it, you know, people are messing around like, weren't you a villain too, like they're all just bantering, like family really. Batman finally shows up, I think Alfred says like, hey, he's here. Batman finally shows up, takes the phone out, puts it on a gargoyle, and takes a group shot of the entire family.
Cool.
Because he wanted his whole family together.
Yeah.
And then he goes and oh my god, this gets me. He puts the picture on his frickin' parents' grave.
Oh.
And he said, it took me years, but I finally built a family, and I thought you two would be proud.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, so frickin' good.
That's a pretty powerful moment right there, man.
Yeah. So to have, hey, Tim Drake's looking into this. Good. He's part of a family. Guess what? It's 2021. If your family's that freaking big, you probably have someone gay or at least figuring it out.
Yeah.
You know? And so, of course, the issue was sold out in my comic store, too. I am not shocked. And that's, I think it was in Urban Legends. That's like an $8 book, too.
Yep.
So for it to sell out right away says something.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm sure they were happy with the sellout.
Yeah, good for them. We're in the 21st century, you know, like, you know, comic books have to change with the times, and I'm glad that they are. Definitely to get back to the whole clickbait thing. That kind of annoys me, just the clickbait aspect of it, just because now when I see a headline like that, I don't even look. It's like, eh, you know. Yeah. It's like, you know, like, I understand they're a business that, you know, the more clicks they get, the more money they generate. But at the same time, when you turn away people like myself, like, who's not going to click on it and might have clicked on it before had it been real, I don't know if you're further ahead. I really don't. You know, like, the non-comic fan, I think, would be like, oh my God, I got to check this out. But, guys like me are cynical at that kind of type of headline. I'm not going to fall for it, you know. But anyway,
yeah.
I digress. all right, well, I think this is an episode. But before we go, we play that little game of where we can find you on the internet. So I can be found here on the Pop Culture Pub Podcast, and it's part of the Pop Culture Pub Podcast Network. We have Trek 1701, which is our Star Trek podcast, which Ragnar and I do. And then we also have Geek Fallout Reloaded, which is a quarterly podcast that we do based on the old Geek Fallout podcast that I was a part of. And I also recently just updated my blog in not so much posts, but just kind of my layout, because it's been a few years since I changed some things around. So you can check out my blog at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. And Ragnar, where can we find you, sir?
Well, of course, on the aforementioned podcast, which I like to appear in whenever possible. And RagnarTheTrader.com is my main website. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram, where you can see some of my work and usually hear about trade shows that I have coming up now that those are allowed again.
Excellent. And Ragnar, I'm looking forward to seeing you again at the Edmonton Expo. Fingers
Heck
crossed.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
It was awesome. It was awesome getting to see you and the other two guys from the Trek podcast.
Yep.
It was scarily smoky outside that day, but inside the restaurant, it was delicious.
Oh, yeah. Good food. And, yeah, it was crazy smoky that night. So smoky, yeah, that you couldn't see the tops of the skyscrapers in Edmonton.
That was I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
Or never not seen that.
Yeah. And, Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
All right, in addition to this fine podcast, of course, you can find me across the internet at Masked Library. MaskedLibrary.com is the home blog. I also do podcasts over for the Retro Network, my own one-on-one interview series, Hellions Talks, and then The House Show, where myself and two of my best friends watch old wrestling. It will come back. We haven't announced what the new season is, but in the fall, that will be back as well. And other random places, if you find me online and I'm writing it for another site or a magazine or whatever, I usually hype it up. And lately, for my own site and for a podcast, I have really enjoyed helping out bringing more attention to people's Kickstarters. Like, nice. That has been a lot of fun lately. Discovered some cool projects. And as soon as I'm done paying for those cool projects and the dust settles, then I'll look for other cool projects I'll pay for.
Excellent.
Yep.
Yeah, Kickstarter is great. And, you know, I know I funded a few and got some rewards. And some of them I know I contributed money to, and I know I didn't receive my graphic novel. So, you know, I guess that's money that's gone now. But it happens. It happens.
I'm feeling safe so far, but, yeah, I've seen it too.
Yeah. Well, and then you get people like organizations like Axanar that, you know, basically use it to pay their salaries and stuff. It's like, no, you're not supposed to, you know, you're supposed to be funding your project, yeah. Not paying yourself, you know?
Yeah, it's not really set up for that, in my opinion.
Yeah. But anyway. All right, well, this was our Best of Bad group/organization edition. This was the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I was your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. And my co-hosts are Ragnar and Kevin Decent. And, yeah, this is the end of the episode. So I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to us talk about groups and organizations of bad guys. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future. Yeah, it's the big show.